sophisticated, but if you have this more sophisticated outlook on the world, you have to take account of all things. And we do have to take account of what OPEC are doing. And that would be reflected in the comparative models we're using, because that would be affected through the price assumptions we make, right? So that's right.
If it weren't for that, we wouldn't be attending OPEC meetings, which we are doing.
But how I understand it is that you want to really look at, scientifically, the way the industry looks at investment opportunities, have properly, fully specified models that have all the details of these tax systems, so that you really are getting the proper effect. You're not just getting this simplified 33, 33, 33. I mean, you've got to break away from that. We're looking at how does an investor look at investment opportunities. We know that all of these tax regimes around the world are very complicated things, and the environments in each of these provinces are different. You've got a very different environment here to the one we have in the UK, Nigeria, Norway. But these models will take account of all those differences, and they will take account of the details of the structures of the systems. And at the end of the day, you will be able to make valid comparisons with a 500 million barrel field that you want to have developed and explored in Alaska compared to the way we're doing it in the UK.
Did Ben leave with you, or have you to represent any of his feelings on these issues? Okay. You're just his eyes and ears.
Right.
Okay. I just thought I'd check it out because it's
he likes what he's doing.
Oh.
I think there are other, maybe if I can just add my final comments on the modeling aspect. There are things that Peter in particular can bring which are less easy to model than what we've been seeing there in terms of indices and so on, hassle factors. But that can be an additional aspect to the presentation of the data as well.
Well, I see. I mean, the results of the model are reflected in features, and Peter's analysis would not be happening without a model.
That's right. I mean, they're biased by the, I suppose, some of the numbers I showed you there are biased by what I consider to be a reasonable industry opinion at that time and that moment for that country.
Right.
And that might affect the notional rate of return,
right,
or the NPV by what we got from the raw model before you got some expert attention to it somewhat.
Well,
that's just the spin that you put on the results that you get. Just like
I'm back into the realm of confusion again, because it was my understanding that we were going to use the knowledge we gained from these people to determine what kind of model, if we're going to model, we were going to model. And not necessarily would it be these advisors that did the modeling. It seems that we're away from that now, are we?
That has to be determined, I would say.
I don't think that's been determined at all. No.
The thing is,
I'm seeing either an overlapping or a non-requirement aspect coming. I don't know, maybe I'm seeing something I shouldn't see.
Okay. There are certain steps. I think that the point is there are certain steps that we all agree have to be taken to get to the point that typically someone in the industry would be at when they made a decision about whether or not to invest. And a lot of those things have to be estimated, and which means you'd have to have the toolkit, the cash flow models, and the various types of measures that you would want to use that we looked at today, which include evaluating the sensitivity of various fiscal systems like our tax system or the UK's tax system, and how that affects rates of return and length of payout, and any of the other number of variables which are considered to be important by the individuals who are going to be making the investments. So, I mean, the first step I think is we're on the right track. We have to start defining, those particular things we want to look at. But the underlying tools are the ones in the economist's toolkit, and it's going to be a matter of, it's more of a technical matter of putting the thing together so that the tax codes are all in right, and the depreciation schedule in country A conforms to the one that's in the law, and those sorts of things. But it wasn't my impression that we've I don't think we've skipped the step, any step here. I mean, that would be my...
Well, I guess my impression was not we were skipping a step or was another step necessary.
Oh, does that mean that we... Okay, yeah, I see.
I'm not sure if I read you, but I took it to mean that... I thought we had said at the
bottom. Is the you, me, or him now?
Sorry?
Is the you, me, or him? So
no,
I know.
You.
Okay. Me, you. Okay.
Right. But you were saying you thought that at the beginning this group believed that the task of buying a model and setting it up would be separate altogether from the first part of the effort here to find out exactly what it is we wanted to do with models. And now, since that's up in the air now, do I guard our devices?
With me? Yes and no. I don't see how we get the information to get to that place without using models at this point to get there. Maybe I'm wrong.
The tools, what Chuck has mentioned, are common enough tools. They're four each of three of us has got models of most of the countries, the active models of them, so the other commercial outfits around the world. So they're not the most, some of them may be more sophisticated, more complex than others. But the tools, that's just the tool to make sure we've got the right numbers in and the right numbers, that it's being manipulated correctly. My recommendation is let's not focus too much on that cash flow machine or computer, but let's look at the information that goes into it and the information that comes out of it and how it's viewed. That really your requirement is information. The fact that we need a tool which happens to be a cash flow model, like maybe a very, very sophisticated cash flow model, maybe almost an econometric model in some cases. Nevertheless, it's a tool. What you're asking for is information which from time to time you will use that one or more of these models to compare how you're doing against the competition.
Hey, I'm so glad you said that for me.
Yeah, that's
what I'm thinking. Yeah, that. Okay, now my befuddlement is gone again. Thank you. So we are at countries. I think then that we've determined it's a little premature to make that decision, and they will. We as a committee or a group, we're not going to be meeting. We certainly don't want to meet in February or January to decide which one of these countries are, but we will leave that to, you know, what we want, how do we get there. Is that agreeable, Sam? Is that agreeable?
I mean, it depends on your budget constraints, staff constraint, time constraint. Once those parameters...
We have all those.
Yeah, right. And the more you push them in, the smaller the numbers.
Well, under number two, I guess that's what we're getting from you, is it not? No.
Yes, I guess that before we leave the next question, the very word I don't want to mention, I've got two words I don't want to mention any longer, ROR and model. But by definition, what we've been saying in comparison also requires that there either already is a reasonably flexible cash flow model on the existing Alaskan legislation with all the options that you have looked at in the past or can crank in, so you've got something you can work on fairly easily to examine the net effect. And I guess one of my questions that goes in that is, do you have access to forward forecasts of costs?
We do, yes.
Provided by the industry?
Yes.
Okay, so,
but you know, for currently producing for production that's currently paying taxes, we do.
Okay, so you...
We don't have access to exploration sort of stuff, but I, you know,
Just thinking, one of the issues that came up this morning, which is relevant to the modeling, one of the issues that came up this morning was a very substantial increase in, for instance, well costs. Which in that sense, does that mean that we have to look at yet another aspect of the North Slope, maybe a little bit different than a big field somewhere else in the world, where it's going to have very, very substantially different late life cost increases? If those figures continue, they are somewhat different from on to other big fields in the world. That rate of increase keeps going up.
All I can say is that the information that I've been suggesting, that's a pretty
his information on that side is usually available or can be made available without problems.
I have to check that. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm trying to be as open as possible. It's obviously very relevant to what we're discussing.
I understand, I appreciate that, and I agree with it. It's just I don't know what our constraints are, both with respect to our partners and with respect to our SEC filing.
When can we know?
Well, I would say early next week. I don't know how available people are to check with.
So what's the question exactly? What do you want, the documentation on the well cost?
If we take that one thing, that would imply from some of the comments made this morning that we're going to start losing quite a lot of production fairly quickly because of increases in well cost. Now, that, you may want to have your legislation directed a bit towards relieving concerns in that area by changing. But that's another way of changing your tax. You may address it that particular aspect. If that is going to be a very, very substantial contribution to loss of total production, right?
But before you look at that, you need real justification information to make sure that it's not garbage in there.
I'm trying to find out how much is coming, because it seems to me it's in both parties' interest to have an assessment of the future, and particularly in terms of the sort of modeling we're looking at, is, you know, in the real world, maybe there are other things, not just exploration, that has to be considered.
Okay. We seem to be getting under some time restraints as well, but let's take a glance at the questions and see as we go. Coming out, should it not? What's being done in recent petroleum rate collection?
Yes,
I don't know about the economically marginal field. I would imagine that the definition that I seem to have heard today is an economically marginal field is when, like the cost of the well that we were just discussing, gets to the point where it's not economic any longer to continue to do that. And the
need
to recover the oil. Yes, sir.
Well, the economically marginal oil field is a different thing around the world. It's where we have a situation that the costs and the revenues of that new prospect of incremental production are only just equal to the sort of threshold profit that is acceptable by the investor. So we have this very marginal situation where the kind of economic tests an investor will place on a future project are not being achieved, or are only just being achieved. And is that because
of... Could that also be an effect of looking at it from a state view, where, how much, and from our tax view, with how interested are we in the development of a well, if it's so marginal that there is no return for the extraction of that oil to the owners of the oil, but would still be profitable from a tax base if
the definition that the other side of the Atlantic seems to sort of talk about seems to be that an economically marginal field is one that has an acceptable rate of return pre-tax. But post-tax, the rate of return is not acceptable, so the development doesn't go ahead.
Well, there are other measures of what makes it economically feasible besides taxes.
Well, basically the rate of return is arrived at after the discounted cash flow. So, for the discounted cash flow, you have made a number of assumptions, obviously. But,
and you're saying that's the definition that's used here.
This is what people use in industry.
Because there could be an economically marginal field across the backyard here that would be just almost economical without taxes, but not quite. And if the development costs were a little less, or you didn't have to go quite so deep, or somehow you didn't have to inject, there's other factors.
But that would all come into the cash flow per day. have your projections of revenue, you have your projections of cost. Revenue minus cost will give you the net cash flow,
right.
And then you discount it backwards.
Right, so yeah, taxes is one of the costs.
Right.
There are other costs, that's all I was saying.
Yes, I mean, ultimately, from the sort of analysis point of view, the point at which you go ahead or not to go ahead is that last bit of the tax.
That's something you can do something about with the stroke of the pen, rather than...
Well, I think the relevance of... Catch me if I'm wrong here, but I think the relevance of the question is really that we're attempting to look at these decisions about investments, you know, future ones or incremental ones on food or bay. And the idea of talking about the marginal oil field is just to understand what industry means by that.
Yeah,
there's a heck of a lot of different factors involved. And you just have to be aware of, you know, what an economic and marginal field is. And then
we've had testimony in committee that says this field B is economically marginal field. It's a marginal field. And we've had other people come in and say field B is not an economically marginal field. It is a producing field. How do we, as policymakers, determine who's right? Is it marginal or isn't it marginal?
Well, let me perhaps give you a without naming it, it's in four or five cases recently, if you like to think of. One, there was a field that fell into what Homer just described. What it really needed, we couldn't do anything else with it, what it needed was a tax adjustment. And the government concerned was prepared to be flexible, so we were able to negotiate a tax, which ended up being about two-thirds of what it might be, and that was enough to switch it into the financeable category. In another case...
Well,
In another case, we couldn't do anything with the tax. There was no way of adjusting the tax. The only way of doing it was to try and find, it was almost making, but what it needed was a cost reduction of some
kind. Or better technology.
So better technology. In a third case, it was, we're trying to develop too big a project. Maybe if we make the project smaller, we'll change the technology, we'll just try and develop the best part of the field. And it went ahead in that case. Maybe in that particular case, the company concerned was prepared to accept a smaller apple in the interest of getting at least one bite. So there are all sorts of things which might switch something from being marginal, and my definition of marginal is something that is almost within reach in the current investment climate, with the current returns required. Almost within reach. Now something it won't make but about a 1% rate of return to get it up to notionally, and then regardless of what your consideration sides are, you know, it's about 1%, and you can't do anything major, it's probably never going to make it. A lot of projects we look at in the industry have a negative rate of return if they don't get done. We don't refer to them as marginal.
I think then, moving on, that we do know that there obviously seems to have been industry attacks out of oil business, or at least in out of further exploration and development in the oil business. Is there more needs to be said on that question? Okay.
No, I think there are plenty of examples that we could give if necessary to illustrate even companies, in fact, removing themselves even in production. In fact, if we take
closing down the wells.
In the case of Indonesia in the mid-60s, when Shell actually said they, in fact, I think they had stated in public that they left because they were harassed too much. Because there was a question of changing legislation in a form they couldn't deal with. Now, the industry might argue that that was in effect expropriation, and you might put it in another, you know, another format. But there are a lot of cases where I think we can say, well, some of those graphs that I showed you show the industry cutting back its effort, moving away from that country.
Well, on then number 9, I think it's obvious that that question comes from Alaska. What is our optimum tax policy for a country that has 76% dependability on, or a state on the oil company for the revenues? Is that a fair statement? And that's one of the things we hope to get from you.
I think you had it yesterday, today, repeatedly from David.
Get flexible, please.
Yeah.
But I getting flexible and knowing how to get flexible are two different things, you know.
Way drop.
Yes.
Well, there's two ways. You can either use yoga, or you can have an economic model that tells you how to do it the way the industry, you know, wants you to do it. Or it's the way economists would say you should be doing it, and then being more flexible.
Well, one question I have, though, is, you know, we there is this issue of revenue stability, and you know, Betty alluded to it in the you know, say for instance, for circumstances beyond anyone's control, we had a situation where the wellhead value of Prudhoe Bay went to zero for a period of time. Now, you know, do we want some? The state, I'm sure, would like to have some sort of backstop to at least preserve the right to wait, you know, or something, something else. Or, I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's just an overwhelming public need to somehow say, well, by golly, you know, something. Maybe a nickel. Yeah, okay, a nickel a barrel. You know, maybe, is there some maybe extremely low, but for low price like that? Well, yeah, obviously from revenue, or I don't understand that.
We have a theoretical minimum now, don't we?
We do. We do have the 80 cents per barrel floor, and it was decoupled, I believe, in the recent Elm bill. But I just raise that. I mean, one of the points that our consultants here have made, you know, several times is, what do you want? And I've got to believe that other countries have sort of probably have an element of stability as well as, I mean, you want maximum flexibility, but, you know, you got the crowds in there, and you have, or the government, the sovereign is probably going to be hard-pressed to relinquish, you know, all control over the resource. I mean, and it's, I bring it up just because, you know, I mean, hearing a lot about flexibility and everything, but, I mean, revenue stability is an issue that we might, in some sense, need to address in the comparison, which suggests that I think that because we are looking at the companies, after all, are the entity that are going to be producing and exploring the oil. I mean, that's the way our system works. But we might have to look a little bit at it from the side of the country that developed the tax system, because after all, the companies will be looking at that as part of the political risk. They'll be looking at that as part of the, you know, they're trying to second guess what we're doing while we're second guessing what they're doing, if you want to put it in an us and them sort of thing. I mean, as far as being on the state being a revenue, I see that a lot. But I would suggest that you know, I don't want to make this sound like we need to do a term paper, you know, on the comparative taxation studies and have a nice long history of for each of the countries we select, you know, sort of indicating in institutional fashion, this is how their tax system, this is what it's designed to accomplish in terms of its goals. And one of those goals might be revenue stability. And obviously, the economists are more comfortable contributing the notions of this was the most economically efficient way to go. We realize that you're probably, for other reasons, going to ignore some of what we're saying, but, you know, these are the models. So I just wonder if that might not need to be something that's incorporated. Frankly, I think it probably can be incorporated in the kind of structure that I've been hearing already over the last day and a half, in terms of the, you know, the risks that the companies look at when they're getting involved. So I thought,
there'd be a way to tell if we just, you know, well, were to go around the table and say, how many of us are willing to give up $50 million, $500 million, $1 billion to see that there's more development out there out of our income today? Why would the answers be all over the board? I mean,
what you get up in return is investment return.
Maybe,
but that's how we don't look at it, isn't it? We do it for the hell of it.
Well, that's what you'd hope for. I mean, you do it for something out of it.
But you'll take a long-term investment.
I think there was one point that Chuck was alluding to, this idea of some form of safety net for the state.
Absolutely.
That you would achieve some, at least minimum level of revenue from activities, but of course the problem is you're so far away from the market that that affects the market value of the oil you're producing. And if OPEC get the oil price down below $10 a barrel, there isn't going to be very much to tax. So there's a fundamental problem there. Now, I'm not quite sure how you get around that problem.
I mean, if you actually study petroleum revenue tax in the UK system, there is an upper limit and a lower limit, so that the taxes don't exceed a certain amount, nor will they get away with paying too little. There is a sort of safety net built on both sides. I think it's in a sense, if you actually fed in your data to that system or experimented with a lot of it, you see the kind of upper limit and the lower limit.
Yeah, yeah, but I think we're more fundamental than that. Though. You know, I mean, what I'm saying, I think it's a stark contrast. If that was the price of OPEC set in a way, drops to $5 a barrel for 5 years, we'll get nothing out of the North Sea
country. Oh, yes, but I mean, I was going back to Chuck's point.
Well, we would get nothing out of the North Slope.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So there is these sort of fundamental economic issues that have to be thought of. And I'm not quite sure how you get around that if you go to $9 a barrel for 5 years.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, you're asking for something. If you look at the history of oil prices, they've been characterized by vast fluctuations over long periods of time. And to ask for income stability when your major commodity is in a market that is characterized by price instability seems to me difficult, and you know, when public officials mean price stability, they usually mean downward price floors, not ceilings. As a result, of course, it shifts the price risk to the firms more. And from a standpoint of an exploration, of course, that reduces the attractiveness of the area as an exploration.
So everyone understands the trade-offs. Yeah.
In theory, companies would, supposing we entered an era of $10 oil, so that together with transport, and after deductions for tankerage and the pipeline, there was on paper zero wellhead. I'm here to tell you, they're going to keep producing.
Yeah.
They're going to write off everything to sunk cost, and as long as they can recover their variable, their operating costs, they'll keep going. I don't think Alaskan public opinion would tolerate pipeline going at full tilt, everything just as before, and not one cent instead of less. I think.
Well, what do you say? And close it down.
But surely, in the real world, every new set of circumstances, just like the new set of circumstances we're discussing post 8-6 sitting here today, presents you the opportunity to change the ball game, which is part of the risk the company side. So if that eventuality happens, no doubt you will, if they're still producing, no doubt you will do things a little bit different. Because we're not talking about setting something in stone forever. Both sides know that it's going to continue. Coleman made the point. It's a continuous discussion. As the price goes down to $5 and they're still producing,
there are adjustments on the cost side as well. Yes. That's what we've seen in the UK. There are adjustments on the cost side. The cost would come down as well.
Improved technology and quality.
Yeah, we're just talking. Don't worry, reinvestment. We're doing it well work.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you said.
Yeah, in any sense, there would be adjustments on them. I think we're maybe getting to extreme situations, but I think I understand what Chuck is saying, that, okay, we don't go overboard for a completely hypothetically flexible regime for Alaska, which means that you know, in some situations you're not getting a level of revenue which you require. So we have to tailor-make the system to have those two objectives in mind.
Well, I think, yeah, and then Hubble was addressing that, because it was just my feeling. I mean, our tax system has a tradition of having a minimum. We've had 80 cents a barrel has been in there for a while, or 5 cents an MCF on gas. And I think Homer was saying that the way the North Sea system works, there's a range in which the system's very flexible,
sort of,
but outside, there are some constraints on the top and the bottom.
Yeah, there are sort of inbuilt sort of mechanisms. I mean, extreme conditions are dealt with.
Right.
Going back to Peter's point, I mean, things have to be revised, but it has to be revised in response with industry's approval. That's the main thing. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's the industry that comes to you, and you go to industry. Nobody is going to do things that the other one is going to be mighty unhappy with, so that suddenly you are lumbered with a tax mitigation.
Right.
I think that's the variable that will oil the system and ensure flow of revenue for you and minimize agro for them, which perhaps hasn't happened. But I mean, let's look at it. I mean, Alaska had only been producing oil for 10 years.
In quantity?
That's right, in quantity, in the sense that there hasn't been that long a tradition of producing oil to learn. I mean, how many observations have you had in terms of decision making? I mean, if there is a learning process, and an active learning process, there has to be a number of observations arrived. And in a sense, it seems to me that if you're celebrating crude oil, most of the oil we're talking about is coming from there, there is room for active when it's not too long or too late, you can say.
Have we beaten that horse? Okay. Looking at number 10, are we still interested in number 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to be the president of the Alaska. No.
Okay, number 11. We find that in a sense we can compare apples to apples, but we really can't. Is that... Are you going to give us as close to apple apples as possible?
Yes,
is that,
yes,
that's where we are.
I think that's the whole part of the exercise.
That's the whole thing.
But we can make valid comparisons.
I think that's the sense of what we're after, is valid comparisons that can be considered valid, both by revenue, by industry, by the policymakers. If we achieve that, good Lord, we'll all wear crowns.
I think that's an objective of... A realistic objective of the whole exercise, it's feasible. Yeah.
As to what the other jurisdictions do on local hire, I think we've gotten quite a bit of that, and is there a further discussion needed on that? It seems that, as the impression I've got from that is, as our methods of leasing and so forth control whether or not we can have anything to say about that, particularly with the judicial constraints. Somebody else have a comment on that? Anybody want to beat that horse? Okay. Number 13. And here again, we're back to number one.
It's a case of your objectives and balancing these things that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And there's no golden rule.
Betty, I'm sorry. If I could, we'll go back to local hire. Just one quick question.
Yes, sir. Mike?
At one time during the discussions in legislature over the years, there was a discussion of whether or not it would be practical to put an incentive element in the taxing structure, which would say that if we had a theoretical goal of local hire participation, that we would decrease taxes as an incentive. Has anybody ever been creative enough to come up with anything like that?
Would it withstand our Supreme Court test?
Yeah.
In the jurisdictions where the award of licenses and the approval of projects is very discretionary, as I was saying yesterday, it's very easy to get compliance because you just tell them to hire more locally, otherwise we won't give you any licenses in the next round. Or we won't approve your development approval.
So you use more threatening.
And that's,
yes,
threat.
That's typical.
Reward.
I mean, not just the UK. It's typical. Dozen or two countries. Lean on them.
But your constitution stops you from doing that. Right?
Yes.
Well, the constitution doesn't stop us from doing that provision. The constitution says how we define what a local resident is. We can put that provision in statute tomorrow, and you can see it ratcheted down. The question would be, what you check off and count toward that to get your goals to get your count for the Constitution. The problem is, the Constitution doesn't say anything that we can't go off and structure that. As a matter of fact, to the contrary, we can do that tomorrow.
Do the bureaucrats that administer those concessions, do they retire early to Switzerland? It seems to me there's a tremendous leeway there for
yes, it's
discretion that would... I would not impose on any bureaucracy that I work for.
Trust me.
Yeah, trust me.
That might not be a bad job to have. Early retirement.
Very early.
With a gun.
Just to follow up on that, though, once in a while we do have a settlement of tax litigation. And then the legislature jumps in and says, by God, you shouldn't have done it because you didn't get enough. And so we have perpetuated the problem in that sense, too, because there have been times when the administrations have settled and the legislature hasn't liked it at all. And then we've had the battle again over confidentiality, because we don't really know what they did to settle it. We just know we didn't like it, because the final figure that we did see come in didn't make us happy, because the figure of what we thought we were going to get was a lot higher, and it would have been more fun to spend it. And so we've perpetuate that litigation problem above and beyond just what we're saying and how we set, what we tweak and when we tweak it and why.
and a system like you just described, I think its comments are very pertinent in that this legislature in this state would never allow it to happen, I suspect. Because no matter what a person, no matter what decision that poor person made, there'd be 60 people shooting for her. Not to mention what the companies might do. So, unfortunately, we're stuck with a system where the suspicion level is so high. And I don't know.
On both sides.
On both sides. On every side, all three sides. That's the thing. You've got a multi-sided, multi-headed demon.
Let's call a spade, and I'm the one that does that, but there's been as much suspicion of revenue on the part of a lot of legislators as there has been suspicion of the industry. And then suspicion coming back and forth on both of from them of where the hell we're coming from. So I think that's something you guys should know. In the confidentiality thing, I think we were trying, I was, to get as much at making sure that revenue wasn't telling us, oh, that's confidential information, we can't discuss that with you on a settlement or something of that sort, as there was when the oil company said that's confidential information, we can't tell you that because that hurt our, help our competitors.
And
here
we
said. That's
unique to you, though. The Department of Energy in Britain has no access to information at Inland Revenue. Department of Energy has only their own assumptions about what revenue is getting.
What about Parliament?
Well, I mean, the tax is always kept at a confidential level. Equally, industry does not divulge its information to another company. So the way it seems to work is that industry is seen alone by legislators, which are the government or civil servants or Department of Energy. There, a group of companies aren't seen together. The
I know you weren't.
I probably conveyed the message too quickly, but my point is that, in a sense, you are not too far off from other regimes, in the sense that information of Inland Revenue does not go to anyone on a, open basis. The Department of Energy does not know, who are in charge of licensing, do not know any of the information available to
Inland Revenue. Whether they're making any money or not making any money.
Or any company paying how much they're paying. So they sit side by side, but one side doesn't know what the other is accurate information is. And still, equally industry does not divulge in confidential to the other.
Now, is that true with DNR? Doesn't have information that revenue has, do they?
In certain circumstances, we have formal sharing agreements and stipulations. We have talked to the lawyers about that.
Well, I think I will.
But DNR is information that we have no access to as well.
And the Conservation Commission has access to that, or do you know?
That's right. I remember we went in the back door there one time, and I shouldn't say that. 50 pairs of cowboy boots hit the floor, but no. I'm kidding.
And have there not been any examples of using the leasing system on the local fire issue?
We have a local hire stipulation in the lease form itself that is sufficiently ambiguous so as to sidestep all the legal issues involved. It says, where possible, hire this sort of thing, which I think is a statement of mom and apple pie.
Would you get into trouble with your constitution if you had a system where you actually had negative taxation to attract the oil companies to hire local?
I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see the constitutional problem. I see a wonderful political problem.
It seems to me you already have a form of sort of negative income tax for the permanent fund, which would attract people to stay in Alaska and maybe to come, but I'm not sure if there's any other way that you can introduce a tax incentive to on the local hiring.
Other comments on that?
It's just a question, it seems to me, of trying to measure what you're giving up to get it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's costing you $75,000 per job that you're acquiring as a result of this. And to the extent that the cost is explicit, it may become less attractive as a policy option.
Yeah.
13's back to our old. Yeah, nothing, maybe. I think maybe there's, due to this brought to my attention, there are a number of things related to that local hire that, as our advisors, I think you should know. One is, what is local hire? Whether that means that in what district of the state, put everybody in contributed work before you take people to Fairbanks, or, you know, and that's, and whether it's a percentage thing, and that's been a ongoing battle. The question of local hire was greatly heated up throughout the state with the expiration of the contracts that were in existence between local unions and the majors. And at the time of those, what are those contracts called? Anyway, they expired. Program agreements or contract agreements or whatever. And that heated up the local hire issue. Other things that, whether perceived as, whether facts or non-facts were perceived, and I'm carrying it further than Drew had mentioned, was, as he said, the capital boots, the perception, whether true or otherwise, that at least one of the companies, this was a strong union state, coming from non-strong union states, were trying to break the unions, or whether people were being brought in it below Davis-Bacon, Little Davis-Bacon Acts, all those kinds of things that entered in. And I think that's an issue that you should be fairly familiar with as you're looking at our state. Whether that has any effect at all on the tax situation or anything, or the doing business in the state. It's kind of a, we're getting down to brass tax sections and discussion. And I think that's been a major issue statewide, and was probably, was probably one of the main issues that brought to a head over a period of years, time, maybe 2 years, or, and particularly in my district, the issue of separate accounting or the F feature or others, and started in some instances maybe in attempts to get contracts renewed, and a desire on the part of many of the legislators to see our constituents have a chance to be hired for a job. So there's, it's not just merely a question, in my opinion, I'm speaking for me only, not for anybody else here, and they speak for themselves. But it became an issue of such heated debate that it came to the head and may or may not have made it through the process of the legislature without the unfortunate episode of the Exxon oil spill. And I'm not saying anything anybody in this room doesn't know, but maybe you're not familiar with it at this point.
You kind of beat around the bush a little bit, though.
I know, I beat around the bush. You want to add anything to beating around the bush?
There's nothing to be embarrassed about when you say that you want your people to go to work, and that's one of the benefits you expect to get out of oil development.
I talked to Bill.
That's pretty easy to understand. And
but Sam, I think about that very issue. So
but Betty's saying, and let me just go one step further, that because it has been printed, I think at least one place, there's an unspoken message that is associated with the ELF and that and the economic limit factor vote, and that was is that the unions were using it not because they gave a shit one way or the other about the taxing policy, but they wanted to use it as a lever to influence the oil industry to sign a collective bargaining agreement.
That became pretty damned evident the last couple of days.
Sure, and I think everybody said that, right? And they want to walk. They were ready to walk away and sign the agreement 12 hours before the vote. Problem is, they'd already got the stampede going, and they couldn't stop the stampede.
The barn door was open.
Yeah.
That's just fact.
The troops are gone, and they waited too long to cut the deal. Otherwise, they probably could have gotten maybe one or two votes to hold it.
Politics, kids.
All that stuff will be documented like great Civil War battles.
But I don't know anything about that. I was just listening to Drew during a great time.
Come on, don't make it worse, man.
No, I mean, Fisher, I was just going to say, I mean, employment issue is one of, for instance, the consideration of round of licenses. It's sort of like a
so we're not
point.
Unique in that.
I mean, well, the point is that, you know, once you kind of reactivate your licensing round, I mean, that those are the considerations that are usually at the discretion of the one who gives the license. That if you're going to, you know, get the license, then you hire more people, or we look at your past record. Those are the criteria, one of the things that they look at. Okay.
It's tough here, because of the way the legislation is virtually impossible to do that without changing to a system which is really anathema to them.
I think in fairness to everybody here, and particularly to the industry, would you like to comment on our view of the last session's tax legislation?
I wouldn't mind commenting just a little bit on some of the earlier comments about what our testimony was. I think basically what we wanted, and I think this is pretty much the guts of our testimony for the last 4 years, is that we wanted a tax rate that would basically match the increased cost associated with decline slash decline, which is what the ELF did. So we thought that was a good policy, so we testified in favor of it. We also had concerns about changes in the structure immediately after the capital was invested. And I guess, you know, just for an example, that when we were talking about if prices go low, would we continue to pump because we had all these sunk costs? And the answer to that is, I think we probably would. So that's a correct statement. But in terms of what sort of incentive does that give you to continue exploration or continue association, commit greater funds, it's a damper on that, because the sense is that as soon as you put your money in, now we're going to forget about those costs because you do your projects on a cash forward basis. And so that's a consideration. And then I guess the last thing was talking about applying Alaska tax law. And Texas is a good example. I thought there were a lot of what I would consider extraneous arguments such as that, because maybe Alaska tax law has something to do with Texas, but then our point was that what we're competing against is Texas, and what happens if we have a Texas tax on Alaska? The Texas tax law was a third of what Alaska was. So, you know, there are really two points, which is the ones I just mentioned, that we're concerned about a rate that has a sensitivity to our increased cost and to decline, and that we don't want a tax policy that seems to be sensitive to, you got your money spent, now let's look at what your forward economics are, because that's an inhibitor for future stuff. And so I guess in terms of the last year, that's what I said. And, you know, no particular real world, but we just don't.
I think in that, Bobby, you're kind of trying to rise above the issue that we were addressing, but that's, in that we were discussing the local hire.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable talking about that. I was too much on the periphery of that issue.
So, anyway, so where are we? Thank you.
I wasn't involved.
Would you consider any of the statements made incorrect?
I have to plead ignorance.
Oh, okay. sitting up here feeling a little bit lonely.
Another comment I was just in the search for an effort to aid marginal fields, we ended up with something like a $170 million loan on a non-marginal field.
Okay, on the we're down
by,
there.
By the way, we're looking at next year. This is what are you pegging the Alpha at about 170? Is that what people are saying now?
Yeah.
How's that?
234 in revenue.
Right. That includes
6 months in
right, and there's a cash flow adjustment. So if you just, it's about 165 million on it.
There's another 27.
That's right. Throw that in too.
Right.
That's probably correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't have the numbers exactly with me, but it's, that's very close.
Well, that's the revenue increase side on it.
This fiscal year is 234.
Right. This includes the prepaid disputed amount for the January effective date.
On the downside, though, I mean, next year looks like the pipeline tariff is going to reduce state revenues by about $120 million. The tariff's going up for a lot of different reasons, but that's an unrelated event. But on the overall revenue picture here, pipeline tariff is going up, state revenues are going down, and I think $120 million is the number I've been seeing. So,
$130, but it's dang near offset by the higher prices that we've seen this year. I mean, it's just about...
The price is always fluctuating.
Right, but I mean, if you would take, for instance, take the current price year-to-date for the fiscal year, if you use that and extrapolate for it, get into our three scenarios, but in general, the price has been better this year than it was, and we project it to be better than it was last year.
Enjoy,
we had that collapse in the fall of 88.
I'll be over there as soon as I get back to next stop.
Okay, well, then...
But you're right, there's a whole number of problems.
In going, revisiting our questions then, 14 seems to be still a bit viable, but I seem to have heard you're going to have disputes no matter which way you go. Is that incorrect?
I suppose... You know, our experience of other regimes is that certainly plenty of examples of us changing, you know, for instance in the UK or elsewhere, changing the tax regime very regularly, but we don't get the argument. And is that because I think probably home would agree with me that we have a more open discussion between the parties?
Do you have the same methods of, do you have the same methods of determining the value, or do you have you have a set price where we have to try to determine a price from somewhere else.
Yeah, we have less problems there, so we don't get the arguments on
that. Those were one of the questions that you asked, you know, what sort of pricing.
But we also don't live, and neither do most of the other countries, in an environment which is quite so litigious as the one in the United States as a whole, right? Where, if you like, a difference of opinion is sufficient to provide an opportunity to sue.
Yes.
And unfortunately, in our business, the impact of that on time and money is more horrific, I think, than in many other industries. Particularly after you've already committed the funds.
And I already mentioned we have 2/3 of the lawyers.
At the higher corporate level, I have an impression, just from where I am, the higher up you go in the companies, the less eagerness there is to pursue these. Litigation. It seems more of a test of wills and something or other. The further down you are, and then the further up you go, the corporate level. I mean, taxes owed in Alaska would be a small part of most of the company's cost.
I get the impression of the likelihood of winning is only cost to engage in itself. It attracts the place, many of the place.
Maybe that's a cynical view of the world.
the meat and bones, meat and potatoes.
Maybe we should just emphasize that other point that is very important for the industry, and that is to avoid any tax changes that retroactive. I think we probably try to avoid that as much as possible anywhere else. And even in the big example of the UK, we've had about 30 changes since the start of developments, and certainly in the northern part of the North Sea. And they're always forward changes.
Mid-70s, we got away with it without litigation, but the whole series of the mid-70s ones were actually, or two or three of them, were quite definitely reversals, like natural gas act in the States. And in fact, because it changed the basis upon which you thought you'd made the investment.
Yeah.
Right? From the industry point of view, maybe not from the economist point of view, but from the industry point of view, one or two of them were. And you can even argue that if you looked at the specific time that those adjustments were made in Indonesia and maybe Malaysia, for some of the players, the ball game had been changed materially because of where they were on their investment cycle. Because the price hadn't risen enough to take care of the 85-15 split. So it was in effect, certainly for a while, retroactive legislation.
We understand that issue pretty
well. What Alaska tax policy could have been better designed, and what changes can you recommend? That will come from
the knowledge that you're going to get from the work that we're going to do in the future, whether it's with us three or with other consultants, with other models and so on, is going to help you answer those questions more scientifically.
I think
that's one of the objectives of what you're doing.
I mean, one criterion in the sense that we have to assume that the industry uses models for investment or for whatever, decisions, current or future, they are making. So if you make a comparison with another system, the way it works is that two identical models, given the same set of assumptions and future projections, should come up with exactly the same result. Where you will observe that things still, different results come out, the industry and the revenue or the industry or the Department of Energy sit and examine those particular assumptions made. And I think, in a sense, in order to review the tax, and once you have made any particular consideration, it has to be one that the models by themselves do not produce the actual result. It's the assumptions that go into the model. And in a sense, you will find that in the UK, that there's been time and time and again, industry has come and said, we find this change, this tax you said you introduced in March, puts us X million out of profit. And we're actually going to make a loss of so much. And Department of Energy sits down with them and says, okay, let's go through it and see what price assumptions you made. And I think that is where the emphasis is. You've got to examine the assumptions that go into the industry model when comparing it with your own.
I think you've just hit on the differences between that answers a bit 14. And that you guys sit down and do this, we sit down and do it after it's in court, maybe.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that the Department of Energy says, prove it to us. And clearly, there are always possibilities of mistakes being in the model, bugs being in the model. But assuming that we both use industry and government use the same model, then if you come up with totally different answers, then you've got to examine the assumptions, yes.
Then I think we have revisited, there's one over here on, we've beaten that one to death as well. I think we're to the point now of having to look at back to our agenda for today on No, I am unmistakable. I think that's an interesting, yes. Next meetings and all that stuff.
Well, I'd like, obviously, to need to talk about the next meeting and the full group and little groups and whatever, but from our discussions for the past 2 days, I think maybe my expectations are different than when we've all met around the table without the people we've chosen to work with or some other. And we kept talking about a timeline, and we had to have something ready to come to the legislature in March or April or whatever. And I think that was always driven by a desire by the administration to have something to present by a certain time. And I'm curious, I guess, what I'd like to hear us do is have a discussion of how important it is to have the end product at what point, so that we'll know whether to rush or not rush this process. We've talked about, we don't think there are any hidden agendas. If there aren't any hidden agendas, I don't know why we have to have it on the 15th of March.
Why do you want to delay it? Is that a hidden agenda?
No, I don't want to delay it. I want to know why. I want to know what, you know, who wants it when and what's reasonable. And I think that what we do need is a discussion of what kind of time it's going to take to come back to us with either more questions, and I suspect there are going to be a great deal many more of those. And some answer that you all feel comfortable with of the questions that we've asked you. And I've heard all three of you talk a lot about time constraints and budget constraints, too, in the past 2 days. And I don't think we want to constrain you to the point where we don't have a tool that we can use, recommendations that we can use. And so in talking about timelines, I'd like to hear a discussion from all of us, but also from you as to what's really realistic.
In that line of thinking and on our timelines, I think it's important that we look at another thing that was on the schedule today, and that's what kind of economic models you have available to you in these comparisons of these countries. That, I think, would go into your considerations and our considerations on timelines. And then what I've seen here is that they are available pretty much with each one of your groups as far as modeling of decisions made in the very different countries and adjustments that might need to be made. But we're back again to this modeling aspect more than the answers aspect.
Aren't we now about to wrap up and say, okay, you guys have heard from us, we're going to wait for X amount of time, and we're going to hear from you on recommendations as to how to build these models. I mean, is there something that has to happen between now and that question? Is there still a step that you feel that we have to go through here before you're ready to go to work on a recommendation?
I personally feel there's only a requirement to speak in a bit more technical depth with your technical people who will be running the models.
What about you, Peter?
Yes, I think I suppose I'm still a little bit concerned about how the end product makes it from not just us, really from your technical people, on an ongoing basis to you. The medium of, I don't ever see us in the real world being able to present you with a series of cash flows, which are going to be the sort of thing you and your colleagues are going to, it's how we're going to present the material, it's a communication which is always the biggest problem. I'm not trying to wash aside. I realize where you're coming from as well, but I guess it's that. I mean, we can talk through how. I mean, we've all done it.
What about Homer?
Well, I mean, really, it's very important to know if you are going to use, say, three countries for the sake of simplicity. It's very important to know budget. You don't want to be driven to on economic factors, so it's not usable. But those parameters would determine, we know what models are available. Or each one of us may be aware of a certain amount, in addition to what we know or what we've worked with. Sky's the limit, in a sense that you have to get more of a feel of what are your parameters that you're playing with?
I want information more than I want.
Do you want to spend $120,000? Do you want to spend $500,000? Do you want to spend, you know, that's the criteria. Do you want after model service? Do you, you know?
Well, I've seen studies that cost, $500,000 and studies that cost $10 million, and they're all collecting dust on shelves someplace, and maybe that's what you're talking about.
Well, exactly.
I mean, you're talking about something that's usable, and I think that's where this sort of buzzword economic model has come about.
I think the modeling cost can be kept quite low.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it. I'd like to see a table of contents of the report. I mean, I don't know, or something like that.
I guess
a project design or whatever we want to call it.
In a sense, I mean, if let's suppose the three of us are involved in one or another way in preparing the thing that I think it would be most useful is. Can we agree amongst ourselves what the right input data, I don't care whose model is used, because I'm pretty sure they'll all be right for whether we choose one of our own or one of the third parties or one that he's already made, but it's the input data. Can we agree on a comparative set of data? And we'll have a lot of problems, not because we won't agree, but because we will see it differently in trying to compare your situation. And it's the preparation of that material, and then after we run it through the cash flow for whichever company wants it, including our perception of the Alaskan legislation, because our perception will be different from yours, and that's where I think that, and I don't think there's an awful lot of money in that, in crude terms, because that's my perception. That's how I do it, because I think in the end, that'll come out, that's where the practicalities will come out. And the answer, and what you'll get presented then will be, as someone said, I think earlier, what are the differences in this legislation? And we will have agreed, hopefully, on the input data, so you won't have to worry about whether we use $5 a barrel operating cost in this country or whether that was an offshore field or an onshore field. You will be able to look at that, but you won't have to, at the legislation area, you won't have to try and make a judgment. Your technical people will be able to do that. So I think we want to, if anything, we want to try and oversimplify it all the time, because it's going to get darn complicated anyway. And if I can flip it around the other way, I'd say, your mandate to us really at this moment in time, should we go away and see if we can collectively, if that's the way you want to do it, come up with a suggestion to you of what a time frame will be, who we need to see and when, and make sure amongst ourselves that we agree on the countries we're going to use, and we decide whose model we're going to use, but the base data and the output. And then we'll have to maybe do a lot of thinking between the four groups as to how we present it to you. Put the onus on us, and we'll then have to tell you what the budget looks like. You'll have to tell us that won't work, or somebody else will work. Or you go do it with somebody else. That seems to me the, I don't know, if I put words in your mouth.
No, I would just add to what Peter says in the sense that, I mean, the base data, in a sense, is one set of assumptions you put in. Then you start doing variations on each of those. So you say, okay, I start off with a base price of $18 that stays the same till the end of this century. Realistic or unrealistic, one can quibble about. But I mean, it's ultimately going to be variations around it. But, you know, what if it goes to $20? What if it increases at $2 per year? Or, you know, I mean.
That's just turning the handle of the model.
Yes, that's what the technical people do. What we want to do is have the base model to the point where we've maybe run the flat case and one agreed S-graded case, which we think is a reasonable industry average from our own experience with the companies, right? And those are two cases. They can run for their heart's content when they on their own model. If legislators say, well, you know, what's going to happen if the price jumps up? Because last week we went to the OPEC meeting and they say it's going to be 27 in July. But that's after the event. That's the ongoing tweaking. Isn't it?
Well, I mean, I don't see really any. I mean, maybe Peter will explain to me a bit more what he means by the base, because I mean, I sort of see any variations as the base.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is try not to get into too many parametric runs, because then we just multiply the thing like that, and we won't be able to present them something which I think would be easy to deal with the legislature. They've got to pass on to a lot of other people too.
Yeah.
I was going to tell the group what my commissioner was hoping for. Is that initially we have to choose a model, select data, and to make the first runs with outside expert help. But the longer-term goal, by year from this next session, that is, the 91 session, that we would understand, I mean, the economic section of oil and gas would thoroughly understand how the model operates and all its particulars, would be subscribing for data and be able to grade it. I mean, you may have to go outside from time to time to see if you have done enough about it to find out where you are. And to be able to issue short, clear reports that lay out the comparison and put all the right caveats or glosses on it, that this doesn't take into account this matter of political uncertainty, and it doesn't take into account this problem of environmental litigation, or and so on. But something like that. Our concern is to develop something that will be in-house and permanent, rather than something that depends on having another group like this, or retaining a group of experts down the years. In other words, spasmodically getting back to something like this. We'd like to be able to do it right along, and to do it with this much less late involvement that people are comfortable that. In fact, the last time you and I talked about this, he was intrigued by the idea that it's possible that at some point, maybe not right away, we have a PC model. So that any interested legislator or staffer, it shouldn't be something hidden in a glass enclosed room over at Revenue where you have to wear a white smock, you know, to go in, and it's only written in Fortran. Only the few can tell you.
Yeah, we all have PCs. Maybe we want to run our own on a certain
way.
Changing why? See if we want to.
You'd be able to.
Use paper.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Models like that.
I'll not use paper. To see whether or not we can
really
like
be that. Little Vince trying to get the. How do you figure out these projections? High wizardly calculations are.
Messages from God. Skin
effect. Usually described in Latin.
Another thing that I think that's come out that I hope is not lost in this is just a real evaluation of where we are in the oil kingdom, so to speak, or the oil patch. Should we be sharing more of should our policies be sharing more of the risk? Should our policies be, just put down there advice on where we are in this competitive world, how we stay viable in this competitive world, and how we continue to exist and have the income that we need to exist in our political climate.
Madam Chairman, Secretary Pierce, I think the best argument I've heard for bringing back something, even if it has to be not as long and not as involved as we all might want, but to bring it back somewhere between March and April, is because you and the speaker and Betty and everyone that's been involved with this that knows where it came from and what we were trying to do will be there to help explain it to their colleagues. If this thing sails in the 91 session, you know, who knows who will be where?
I'll be there.
Well.
There'll
be new people, the organizations will change, there'll be a new administration.
Don't get Drew and I wrong either. We're good friends. She started testing that side of it. I guess I was sort of testing the other side of it. Are you afraid to see it, or why do you want it so early? I mean, there's that side to it. The industry folks probably are wondering, well, not, do they have to have it by March? What are they thinking about?
Well, no, my question here on timetables.
No question here has a timetable. I mean, he showed it to us.
Don't look at that again. That's worse than the
Elf
formula.
Anybody's worried about bills. None of us can say there won't be bills. Hell, this legislation, there are going to be 500,000, 1,500 more bills this session. Who all knows what they're going to be, or whether any of them will be all. But do we have the materials and the information to check out before we make a decision on whether it's right or wrong? And my question on timetables at this point is, when do you need to see us again? Or when do we need to see you? Or do we see you again next Christmas? Or do we see you again in January? We've got schedules as well as you have. And I hate to just say, hey, guys, nice meeting you. I've enjoyed 2 days of conversation. And chair of this committee and walk off. And Ben, I run into him. He wasn't here today. And he says, when are we having our next meeting? And I said, God, I don't know. Probably the 3rd July in August.
So you started signing cast. I think you signed, these guys over here to, report to us in a week and find out what they've heard from these guys and
Mr. Vice Chairman, sign away. Let's get rid of it. That's the way I feel, but I need to know from you. If you don't have what you got horns, right? Now, the telephone, pick them up. Fax machines, whatever.
Well, I understood from the letters I received was something like a midterm meeting. I mean,
yes, that's what. And you're supposed to be giving, as I understood it, some reports.
Yeah.
Hey, if you think the three of us can impart the knowledge that we have gained from this effectively to 60 people without some help from you, hey, hang it up. Because they're going to be saying, oh, what's their hidden agenda? You know?
We're trying to pierce out a comment on this.
Yeah, Jesus, what's wrong? Something's going crazy around here.
My view is that it wouldn't be unreasonable to think, depending on how you decide to go about it, which is maybe a little bit different than we had it in the letters originally, but it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that we could begin to look at a prototype, I'm not saying all, sometime in January, I don't know what you feel. And maybe by looking at a prototype, not trying to be too clever, not saying that's sort of formal, we A, don't spend too much time and money on it before we get to pass it in front of you again, and say, is this the beast that you really wanted to have? By which time we'll have had a lot more discussion between us.
That's what I'm getting at. What do we look at as, if we leave it rather open-ended and say, hey, we'd like to have something, at least to know where we are around the end of January, February, whatever it is.
I would suggest earlier, in a sense, I would suggest the first half of January.
Find us all yet.
Our session starts 8th of January.
That's the second Monday.
And how is your time? Because, I mean, from what we understand, this is going to finish by the early March. In this particular exercise of selecting, or recommending to select.
Once we select, does that mean that we have a usable piece of
now that's where we're supposed to go together.
If I understood, Peter, the idea would be to see if we couldn't get together on a suitable cash flow model that would do at least the first rubrics test for 4 or 5 different things, net present value and rate of return and so on, and then bring this to you when you're in session in early January and say, this is what this can do. Are we close enough, or what has to be added or taken out? And then, with that go-ahead, proceed. Maybe simultaneously the data could be collected for these 6 to 8 places that seem the natural choices for comparison.
But will that answer some of the pressing questions that we have on where are we today in the world market, what do we need to do, what's wrong with our...
We would sort of present you with the opportunity to see... This is what you plug in, and this is what comes out. If you have any other questions,
then will this base material that you're talking about come about as a result of the information you're trying to get?
That's the mechanics. I mean, the really important stuff is the qualitative analysis. It's how you approach the subject. It's the criteria you use for comparing. Yeah. It's answering the kinds of questions as they pertain to the issues, which I think everyone's got a pretty good idea of what concerns the legislature from talking. That's what concerns me. I'm not so concerned about a cash flow model. I mean, I just repeat, I don't see that as a major... I don't think that is not even a time factor constraint at all. I mean, frankly, it's not. I mean, the data input is important. And that's the question I always have is, can you guys get great cost data on what we're going to be looking at? Because cost data is absolutely tough to get. I mean, good cost data. Cost data that most people will agree is appropriate. But I really... Well, anyway, that's just my input.
Right on.
Then, assignment number one.
contact with already?
We all run our own models anyway.
No, I mean, back in Alaska here.
Oh, you mean for modeling for over here?
I sort of thought Chuck was...
Yeah, we have made that assignment as far as getting them here was concerned. Is that satisfactory with...
Oh, it's what we want.
Yeah.
Chuck seems to have gotten
okay.
Those
twice. That sounds good, and I'll continue to work.
Did you say your holiday was in January?
Holiday, yeah. Then I'll continue to I'll work through the chairman, through Betty and Nancy, to ensure that the information is disseminated, or would that be appropriate?
Yeah, and Jerry Shields too.
And Jerry, that's right. Okay.
And I think it's fair to say that the DNR people and the gas conservation community, oil and gas conservation commission people who are not here, would certainly be willing to share information with you too. The statutes allow them to, but Chuck can put you into contact.
Right, that's right. We'll put you into contact with those other.
Then I am assuming that we have said that we will hear from Chuck, that we could possibly have another exchange somewhere in the January area. Is that correct?
I would appreciate it, Madam Chairman, if we were a bit more specific on the dates at this stage, because we have to work soon as
I like the 20th of
January. And final.
How do you like the
20th?
That's
probably
the Super Bowl, so.
What day is that, Sunday?
21st is Sunday.
I just picked that out of the clear blue sky, man. I don't know what day it is.
It's Diane Lane.
I was trying to get it down.
Right.
Diane, 20th?
I'd like to do a short term.
I don't even know why you have a preference. It sounds like it's earlier the better, you know. It is.
We could do it that first weekend.
We're going to be there. We're going to get busy the longer we're there.
Yeah. Can we set aside then around the 13th, 14th, first weekend of session? They might as well freeze their funds off with us.
No, it's probably going to be light, fluffy snow. I'm going to have to stay inside instead of grass.
Yeah, this would be an Anchorage
Anchorage.
No, no, Juneau.
In January, right. You out of your mind?
No, I just—he was saying light, fluffy snow, and I can't believe he's saying that in Juneau in the same breath.
Absolutely.
So, okay, I haven't been there enough in January.
They've had already had a foot of snow down there. Understand?
Yeah, and I'll be over
13th, 14th that weekend there.
That is dependent upon if you can get in, maybe.
The weekend of the 13th and 14th. Well,
yes.
The meetings would be over the weekend.
Apparently, countries are. We can also learn the states.
That's a good question. What are we taking into consideration as we look at countries?
I suggested a state. I at one point suggested a state shouldn't be overlooked, although really what we're looking at is, in many ways, I don't want to try to redefine this question, but I'm trying to look at it through investors' eyes. And so as you look at Alaska, you're going to see the Alaska tax and the federal tax and all the things that are considered with you doing business here. So comparing. Where our competitors, the competitors for your dollars are. And
will one of our competitors be California or the Gulf State or?
The offshore environment has some analogs to Fruto Bay, but I don't think the onshore is.
We're not up against Oklahoma.
Right.
Not anymore.
Yeah. No, we're not up against the stripper well.
No, honey.
Whereas the offshore environment attracts the major companies and the major independents.
And I would like, I know that we'd all be interested in knowing when you have kind of decided or made a choice of the countries you think are appropriate for us to make the comparisons with. You will let us know, Chuck?
Right, sometime, do we want to have a specific sort of time on that? I mean, I was thinking.
I would think that would be a decision that'd be made rather soon.
Right, I would think, that's what I'm thinking, that as soon as I heard back from our consultants that, they'd have, that would be one of the recommendations.
I would think that there'd be some input in that.
Sure, because then everything will just be passed through the committee. And
are we then looking at the 13th, 14th of January?
Is that a Monday, Tuesday, or
that's a Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday,
We love working on Saturdays and Sundays. It could be changed to a Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday would probably be
much better.
Well, that way if they did overfly or if we wanted to spend a little Sunday.
That's a good point.
Yeah, 12:13. I mean, we are cast in stone right here.
Senate will be on a long weekend anyway.
I certainly hope so.
And it's all right by the consultants then, or my department will make at least all your reservations at this end, then you can fly over as you if and when, you know, if, however you want. But we can pull from the hotels and all that. Okay. Madam Chairman, I would suggest that the 12th is a good idea because I'd like them to have some